Good morning, everybody.
Hello, gang. Happy dancing. Folks probably don't know this, but Brett actually has an entire brass band in the other room. That's why it's a little quieter. But they just go. It's pretty remarkable that you can get in Phoenix. the Johnny Carson talk show kind of, yeah, exactly. Maestro. Wrap it up. Very cool.
Oh, my guys. It's summertime. It's springtime around here. I don't know where for you guys. It looks like you're cold, John, but it's getting warm around here.
You know, if I aimed you at the window, you'd see blue sky, and it's been a long time since we've seen it. So it's mild today, probably high in the mid-50s. That's balmy. It's shorts weather for us.
Yeah, practically. Huh? We're here in Eastern Ontario. Also have a sunny day with blue skies, but yeah, the winter's clinging on with us. It's only going to go a little above freezing today. That said, I have abandoned the winter coat. After going to Learning Solutions last week, the winter coat is done. It's going to go off to the dry cleaners this week. I have officially declared winter dead.
Wasn't snow on the ground when you got home?
There was a fresh snowfall when I left last Monday, and there was, I mean, it was, that part was melted, but there's still hunks of snow everywhere. I mean, I look out my window and there's another parking lot and the snowbank from the shoveling is still like 8 feet tall, melting. Yeah.
And slag heap of snow. You need the big jacket, John. That's not how this works. It's not about the snow up in Canada.
I had my wool pea coat on this morning when I ran to the store to get my beverage of choice, sponsored by Diet Dr. Pepper.
John Kissinger voiceover is brought to you today by Diet Dr. Pepper
and Throat Coat Tea.
And Throat Coat Tea.
I was gonna say, by the way you talked about the weather, all I could visualize was you in front of a weather map on TV being the weatherman.
Over here we have some sunnies.
Over here, it's raining lanyards.
And over here, it's raining men.
No. Hallelujah.
Nice. That's very good. That is a very good comeback.
Pay attention.
We have some real things to talk about besides the chit-chat and the weather. But, you know, weather is what binds us all together. Even if it's not the same weather, we've all got things to complain about. That's our natural Canadian status, I think, sometimes. Post nor'easter in Long Island too. Yeah, cleaning up all the branches and stuff that probably fell. Although that might wipe a lot of the grit and stuff off the street after the winter too. Anyway, very cool. So yeah, we have the inimitable John Kissinger with us.
Hello.
Gonna run through a bunch of things today. Maybe John, just give us a quick reminder. I mean, you've been a guest with us before, but just a quick little 30-second thumbnail bio, just so that the folks who are joining us today have a sense of who you are and where you're coming from.
Well, I'm a man of two worlds. I split my time, I don't want to say equally, it's not quite equally anymore, but learning strategist by day, voice actor by night. I keep that mild-mannered instructional identity going. Because, you know, it was funny. I was down in Atlanta last week at the world's largest conference of voice actors, VO Atlanta. It happens every year. 6, 7, 8, I don't know how many, 1,000 people converge from all walks of the industry. And I realized as I was invited to present to them on the topic of e-learning narration, how when I'm with the learning community, I'm an advocate for the voice acting community. When I'm with the voice acting community, I'm an advocate for the learning community. And maybe that's my lot in life. Maybe I'm supposed to be the bridge between disciplines, because I think they both have a lot to learn from each other, to share with each other. And so I assume that's why you wanted me to come here today. So 20 years in the training discipline before I got into voice acting, cut my teeth as a instructor-led trainer. Turned instructional designer, training manager, training director, you know, did that sort of soup to nuts for a big global brand, a small pizza joint you've probably heard of called Domino's, and this little mom and pop place, you know, maybe.
Yeah.
And now I work for an experiential marketing agency called Experience Communications, and we work with a bunch of different big global brands on learning solutions. And then I spend my nights, lunch breaks, weekends, doing all things voice acting, because I just can't leave well enough alone.
We've got a bunch of folks in our community that have used you for projects before.
That's right. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I'm happy to help. Anyone else needs a voice, I'm available. Always available.
And today's episode is actually a preview of John's voice. So if you like it, you're hearing it live now.
I should be recording through my better mic, but the problem is I can't invite you all into my booth. It's very small. It's kind of designed to fit one guy, and that's me. So
the magic of the voice actor's booth.
That's right. So hopefully it's coming through clearly enough on this little dongle.
Nope, everything is rocking loud and clear for sure. I'm having a mind gap. I have not had nearly enough coffee, clearly. Sorry about that, gang.
I have a few more swigs. We'll wait.
Brent, pick up the slack for me here, bud.
Yeah, okay, sorry. So last time you were on, it was funny, towards the end, it was just you and I, and we ended up dropping some knowledge nuggets right at the very end, and I think
Why did we wait till the end? Were we busy just gibby-gabbing like this?
I think we were busy just gibby-gabbing, and one of those things was we were talking about taking care of your voice, and I don't know why this keeps coming back to me, so let's just talk about it and get it out of the way, and we won't have to worry about it, but even if you're a total novice, if you're an e-learning professional and you guys don't have a budget to hire somebody outstanding in their field like John to do your voiceover work, you can do some good stuff and some very simple things to do it yourself and to get a decent quality until you can get a budget to upgrade to somebody professional. And one of those things that we talked about was taking care of your voice and making sure that you get the sound or the tone that you want or whatever. And you mentioned a particular tea. So let's start there, because I know we have a lot of tea lovers. What was your brand of choice?
Yeah, this is traditional medicinals. It's called Throat Coat. So as one might imagine, something that says throat might be a thing you want to look for when you're talking about protecting your throat. I drink this very consistently. It's interesting. It has overtones of licorice and slippery elm. And either of those things, licorice root, slippery elm, any teas that have those things in them are relatively highly regarded for taking care of, lubricating the throat, basically. I don't know if it's possible to overdrink this, but I drink it pretty much every day or so, especially when I'm, getting warmed up to do some work. It's not the only tea, I'm sure, that is available, but it's one that's definitely bandied about within the learning community. In fact, in the goodie bag at the conference I just went to, they had a pack of Throat Coat tea in there. So I was sure to use it after 5 sessions I needed it.
I was going to say, with a name like that, there had to be a big booth or something in the expo, right?
No, there wasn't. I don't know that they're, chasing the voice acting community specifically.
They are missing an opportunity, let me tell you.
You know, it's interesting. One of the things I love about the learning community is it's very recommendation and referral based, right? We try things and other people are like, hey, what are you doing? What did you do? What software are you using? What mic are you using? What technique, tool? What? And we share liberally, right? It's the same in the voice acting community. Mm-hmm. And so someone sometime found this out and started promoting it within the community. I doubt traditional medicinals even has us on their radar, but who knows?
And it has no caffeine, right?
It's an herbal tea. It's non-caffeine. Yeah, yeah. That's why I've got to bring in the big guns, right?
I know. So, I mean, should people be avoiding caffeine, though, if they're going to do a voiceover stretch?
Well, yes. So the number one thing you can do for your voice, and this is anyone in any walk of life, is drink more water. So caffeine, being a diuretic, helps us expel said water at a more rapid rate, causing dehydration. So this is not hydration. One needs to be aware. But certainly we need to drink more water. Lots and lots and lots of water. Caffeine probably should be avoided. Because as it dries you out, it dries your throat out, it dries your mouth out. And so you're going to have, your throat's going to get sorer. You're going to get more mouth noises and you read more pops and clicks, that lip smacking. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. And you don't want to, like, I'll have water in the booth with me, but the real thing to do is to make sure you hydrate well before any recording session you do, right? Couple hours before, hour before, 30 minutes before, whatever you can do. All day long is ideal. I mean, it's just what it is. I don't drink nearly as much water as I should. I know I should, but I try to balance it with my caffeine intake and other sources of hydration.
And I've read J-Rock with the ASMR reference.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm not sure that's the comforting ASMR that many people reach in any way.
That's right. And when we're trying to teach people stuff, is that really what we want them to pay attention to?
Yeah,
no get kidding. The feedback. Wow, that was really clicky. It was. Yeah. I really enjoyed those lip smacks.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Sugars too, though, are a challenge, right? For throat. I've read they kind of get you more phlegmy, in fact, than you probably want as well. At least that's something that I think.
Read that, but that's entirely possible. In fact, you know, my mom, when I was growing up, a huge tea drinker, and she always had this thing when she'd get a cold, she'd say, you have to scald your throat, right? You got to, in order to clear that mucus out, you need the water to be almost boiling. And then you just kind of, I don't know what she was thinking, right? But I just saw a research report. I can't remember who published it, that says drinking any beverage close to the boiling point increases your, and there's data to support it now. And so I had to give her a heads up. Hey, Mom, it's never too late to stop. But, you know, she's not getting any younger. How about we don't go out the hard way?
I always heard lemon, like squeezing lemon into regular tea. If you don't have a special throat coat tea, and then honey and lemon.
In fact, you can sip the tea altogether. So a lot of voice actors swear by just warm water. You don't want super hot water because you don't want to, you know, burn your mouth and scald your vocal cords. What you want to do is have warm, because it's like the throat is a muscle, right? And so you want to warm it up just like any muscle. You shouldn't really start exercising until your muscles are warm. So warm water with honey and lemon is a great remedy. Not, you know, it's what grandma used to give you when you had a cold, maybe, but it's great for warming up the vocal cords as well. And then as you're consuming that, doing some vocal exercises to warm up, maybe some humming, quiet singing, nothing too straining on the vocal cords. Tongue twisters are awesome. Anything to kind of get everything loosened up and working before you have to record. Definitely.
Rubber baby buggy bumpers.
Yep. And lots of Sister Sally sells seashells by the seashore, and anything with teas, fat, lazy cat, you know, those sorts of things. How now, brown cow, Alan says, yes. But you have to say it with an affectation. How now, brown cow?
Or here in Canada, we say, roll up the rim to win.
No, that's right, at Timmy's. You know, I was surprised how far south. So last week when I went to the voiceover conference in Atlanta, I actually did a road trip. I didn't want to fly. I was sick of flying. I just wanted to get out of the office, out of the booth for a while. It was a 12-hour trip. And I kept thinking, okay, when are we going to stop seeing Tim Hortons? Because it spilled over into Michigan, where I live from Canada. I'm sure it's in New York and Ohio and everything the other side of Lake Erie. But I don't know how far it went. It was surprisingly further south than I thought. I think there was a Tim Hortons down in Kentucky somewhere. And I don't know. Do you have them out west by you, Brent?
You know, we don't. I remember somebody telling me about the amazing wonders of Tim Hortons, and we don't have them down here.
Jack says, anywhere there are snowbirds, there are Tim Hortons. I suppose
we got plenty of snowbirds down here. Yeah, I mean, without
I didn't realize they were U.S. owned. Now they're a Canadian company. Wasn't Tim Horton like a big hockey player or something?
He was a co-founder with another fellow. But yeah, like many corporate things, it has, you know, been bought and sold and shifted around and part of other conglomerates, that kind of a thing.
So. Well, I'll have you know, Jack, you said it's not that great, but I try to get there for a pretzel bagel with egg and cheese as often as I can. Beyond that, I can't, you know, I can't endorse, but yeah, I was there this morning getting one.
Hey, John, do you do your own editing? Like, I'm
absolutely, yes.
Like, let's say you get some lip smacks and you're in your favorite editing tool. How do you get rid of it? But then I thought, well, wait, we better figure out what he uses first.
So I use an editing software called Twisted Wave. I think it runs about $79. A lot of people use Audacity because it's free. I prefer the interface of Twisted Phase. I find it very easy to use. It's just a single waveform editor. So Adobe Audition is hugely popular as well in the voice acting community, but it has so many bells and whistles I don't need for just general voiceover recording and editing purposes. Yep, John Rock is right. Reaper is also used, and a lot of people use it because it has punch and roll recording, which we can talk about later. But I use it. I do all my editing and recording within Twisted Wave. And in terms of how do you edit out lip smacks and stuff, you do and you don't. If the lip smacks are really bad and they happen in the middle of a waveform, good luck editing that out. Yeah. If you have something like Adobe Audition, you might be able to use the auto heal function or go into the spectral editing function, which doesn't see the waveform. It shows the frequencies displayed a little bit differently, and you can see stuff that's in the waveform that you can't see when you're looking at the waveform itself. But I use a plugin from a company called Isotope. They make a software suite called RX7, had RX6 before that, and one of the plugins in that suite is a mouth declick. And so it works brilliantly. It's very popular in the VO universe because of how well it works without corrupting the rest of your audio. You got to be careful with it, though, because if you go too heavy-handed, it starts perceiving anything like a T sound, a consonant sound at the end of a word, that it might accidentally corrupt. It might like erase, or it might change somehow, or it just doesn't sound natural. But a lot of these are, they have settings you have to play around with, and sometimes it can be a bear.
Yeah.
Another reason, I think, to go with people who are pretty versed in such things, but that's what I do. Yeah. I do all my own editing. So after I edit the waveforms and everything, I'll lower kind of the breath noises. Some people want them out. I prefer to leave them in because it sounds more natural. I think I may have said this last time we were talking, Brent, but when you take all the breaths out, the person listening starts gasping for air because people don't talk without breathing, right? And so it becomes very unnatural, and you're like, when's he going to take a breath? When's he going to take a breath? I need to take a breath. but I do all the recording. I'll minimize the breaths. I'll take out unwanted spaces. I'll remove takes that I did redos on. What we call pickups. Pickup is like a retake of something. And then I'll run it through a set of processing where I'll do a little downward expansion to minimize room noise, which, you know, you'll know the difference. If you're listening to a recording and the background noise, and I'm not just talking about acoustic reflections, I'm talking about the cars driving by, the dogs barking next door, the hum of the air conditioner. You know, that's another reason we have well-treated vocal boosts to try and get as much of that out as possible. But there's still always a little bit of room tone in there. And so you don't want it to be too noisy, because when you raise the volume, that noise comes up with it. And then I'm just trying to think if I'm leaving anything significant out here. So I'll run some processing, maybe a little bit of compression, a little bit of expansion. Not heavy, because you don't want it to sound unnatural, right? Run the mouth declick, maybe a little bit of frequency adjustment. So I do a little EQ on the voice, not much, but just enough, because even in that well-treated booth, there is going to be, it's because it's so small, it's going to affect the frequency. It's going to boost certain frequencies that you don't want. So you have to kind of adjust those back out. It's a delicate dance between the recording environment and the acoustics of that particular space, how well it's treated or not. That's generally why in professional recording studios, there'll be bigger rooms, well treated, but bigger rooms. So the sound has room to breathe, but okay. The bigger the room, the more room you need in your house. And you have to treat for all of those things acoustically. So if you're in an office environment, you know, heaven help you. I'm in a smaller space. Most voice actors who have home recording booths, they aren't huge. And the good ones, I think, maybe have an isolated, big, full-size kind of room. But the shape of the room matters, too. Is it square? Is it rectangular? Is the ceiling high? Is the ceiling low? How close are the walls in this direction versus this direction? It's a science.
Like everything, can be overthought too much.
Yeah. I know. It probably sounds like I'm overthinking it, but I'm telling you, it matters. It really, really matters.
Jack has a question in the question panel. What about people like me that have a natural wheeze, not due to shallow breathing, but to sinus, lungs, allergies, those sorts of things? I have to breathe more often than most people, and I hear it in my podcast. But to edit that out, it just sounds weird.
Well, instead, you may be able to selectively edit some out and then just minimize others. When you edit a breath out, what you don't want to do is close the gap in the waveform. So, for instance, if I said, "Hi, Jack, my name is John," take a breath, continue the next sentence. I am a voice actor, right? Okay, if that's what you're dealing with. When you come to that breath, what you don't want to do is delete that breath, because then it smashes the waveform together and it says, "Hi, Jack, my name is John. I'm a voice actor." You know, it's just like, I mean, that's not an egregious offense, but you do that too much and the timing doesn't sound natural. So what you can do instead, if you're breathing too often, you can delete some of them, but replace it with room tone. So find a spot in your recording where there's no voice happening, but all you're hearing is the background noise of the room. Just clip out a section or copy a section of that's about the width of the breath that you took, maybe slightly less, and then copy replace that into where your breath was. That way you preserve the kind of natural pacing without having an intrusion of too many breaths. Now I'll say, I don't recommend taking them all out, but some e-learning clients want them out. And if that's what they want, that's what I'll give them. But I'll always leave that space in there so that the read doesn't feel too unnatural, too rushed. And then you really will have your listener gasping for air.
J-Rock says, own your wheeze.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I think you know, our voices are our voices. If we don't like them, there are people out there who can help you with that, right? Whether that's through getting vocal coaching and training to work out some of those kinks, or if you don't have time or don't want to make the investment in that, there are folks such as myself who are happy to do reads for you. And I know Jack has hired other voice actors before and so forth. So
yeah. And Deborah's pointing out what you alluded to or mentioned earlier, John. Deborah says, when I listen to audio where there's no breaths, I stop breathing. So
yeah,
you shouldn't get out of breath, literally trying
as the listener, right? You know? Yeah, right. Exactly.
I'm exhausted after just listening to that e-learning course. Yeah. And I will also mention, in addition to own your own wheeze, J-Rock mentions there's room for trumpets and saxophones, but oddly enough, he's not including trombones. For some reason,
what happened there?
The talking about not removing
the old Brent.
Yeah, your mention of, you know, not removing the space where the breath is reminds me of something way, way back in my teenage years that I read an interview with Eddie Van Halen, who said, you know, if there was one tip you could give an aspiring guitar player, and his answer was, listen to trumpets and saxophones. He said, because they have to take a breath. And that's what makes the music, is the space.
Oh, well said.
That's interesting. Like, oh, that's deep. That's deep, yeah. Eddie. Anyway. Oh,
I like it.
So. That, when he first started playing, he had no idea how his amps worked. And so he just turned all the knobs up to 10 and then just went out and played.
Yeah.
You got to do what you got to do.
That famous Brown sound, right?
You know, you just got to get out there and do it. When I heard that, my first thought was, you know, good on you for just getting out there and doing it. I'm sure somebody told him or he figured it out as he went, but he was just like, yeah, I'm going for it.
Ed has a question. How much time do you use for post-production?
So generally, the way we think of it in the voiceover community is as a ratio. How much time do I spend recording versus how much time do I spend editing? And so we're always striving to improve our efficiency. So you will see typically anything from a 1-to-3 to a 1-to-6 ratio. That means if I spend an hour recording, it might take me 3 to 6 hours for the entire project, recording plus editing and so forth. My ratio varies depending on how much I'm in the mood to second guess myself. I think this is, you know, as voice actors and artists, we strive sometimes a little too hard for perfection. You know, hobbling together Franken tracks of, I like this piece from this take, and I like this piece from this take, and I like this piece, and then and then you spend way too much time editing. But, you know, we want to give you the best result that you're after. I think a lot of it comes with training. A lot of it comes with confidence, being willing to take a chance, take a risk, and trust that what you're saying is good enough. Like, and I don't mean good enough, but it's like that is the right read for that script. So it varies. I'm definitely in that window somewhere. 1-to-3, I think, as a ratio is you're really, really good. And I remember days where it was taking me 1-to-12, you know, this is killing me.
And that's something that if you're hiring talent, you just sort of think of we got 1 hour's worth of file back or whatever. So therefore your mind kind of logically or understandably says, well, okay, so maybe it took him 2 hours to record that, but not understanding or not recognizing that 1-to-3 to 1-to-7 sort of, you know, ratio that represents a lot more time.
Oh yeah. It takes a lot of time because you have to keep in mind that when you're doing the read, you're inhabiting a character. Even if it's just a standard narration kind of read, there's an audience that you're communicating with and there's a persona that you're embodying as you're kind of reading that. It might just sound just like my voice, but it's more of an attitude shift, right? Whom am I speaking with? How am I speaking with them? And make no mistake, it is acting because you're in there visualizing someone that you're talking to because you're not just presenting to a mass audience to make the read feel real and to make it feel like more like a conversation than a monologue. You're thinking that the whole time, right? And you're monitoring yourself while you're doing it. And if you don't, it's easy for me to tell when I'm kind of getting out of the mood, right? And then you kind of got to reel it back in. And I might have to do some pickups. I might have to do some retakes where I realized that I was kind of, my mind was drifting and I just fell into the trap of reading instead of acting. And, you know, so
in when you're watching like behind the scenes footage of real actors voicing a character for a cartoon, for example, and when you see how they did the recording, you're right about the big room. Now that I think about it, they're always in a big room because they're acting when they're doing the voiceover. They're not standing there reading the script through, you know. I guess I've seen some do that, but some of the, like, you watch Robin Williams voice.
Oh, he's all over the place, right? Doing the genie from Aladdin or something.
Physical in by himself in a booth as he is on stage or, you know, on.
So if you've seen me present at conferences, I maybe even just here, you see I'm using my hands a lot. I never used to be such a, this might sound wrong, but it's technically correct. I never used to be such a gesticulator, you know, like because when I'm in that booth, I'm performing and I'm self-directing in a Hollywood studio. Yeah. You know, you want to physically embody the performance so that it comes out in your voice, but you're also being directed. Someone is telling you, do this, be more like that. When I'm in there, and when most voice actors who work from home, which is the vast majority of the industry, especially in disciplines outside of animation or commercial. They're directing themselves. And so A, we have to embody the physicality of the performance. And then B, we're constantly monitoring ourselves and correcting and adjusting our performance to make sure that we give you the best, most authentic reads that we can. But sometimes we're live directed even at home too. I just did, maybe a month ago, I did a massive project for Aveda Cosmetics. Who knew? I mean, does this look like a face that wears Aveda Cosmetics? But they wanted me, they were creating some e-learning kind of quiz game thing. And they chose me to do it. And they live directed me over, not Crowdcast, not Skype. They used a system called BlueJeans. I don't know if you're familiar with it. Yeah. And they live directed me, and so I'm recording and I'm doing multiple takes. I say, well, do it a little bit more like this, or do it a little bit more like that. Yeah, so, you know, that stuff takes time, and then you have to edit all of that, all the bad takes out. So you have to have a mechanism to easily identify what's a keeper, what's a throwaway, all that kind of stuff.
I was actually wondering about, you know, the possibility of and how often that sort of happens to you, where the client, in the case of the e-learning stuff, is actually either, you know, Skype or another tool in there. Is that a very common thing in what you find?
So in terms of, like, if you were recording commercial, for instance, they'd have you use a fancier system. Okay. Called that, you know, something like, well, the old gold standard is something called ISDN, which are physical phone lines coming into your home. And then there's a decoder box that sits in your rack mount with all your effects processors or whatever else you're using. That's kind of like a phone system, and they dial in, and the quality of that sound is extremely high. And they're actually, because of that, recording it on their end. Like, okay. When I'm recording on my the very laptop that we're speaking on, that you're seeing me on today. But ISDN is a entirely separate system, but it's kind of dying. So there's some new technologies that have replaced it. One is IPDTL, IPDITL. There's another one called Source Connect that a lot of voice actors use. That is basically the internet version of ISDN, not precisely. That's generally, though, when you're working with the big kahunas who are communicating with you from a recording studio where they are capturing all that audio. Most clients that I've worked with they let me direct myself. Some folks who are on the call, on the Crowdcast included here. And then, you know, they'll send me the script. We'll do a little email back and forth on the tonality they're looking for, maybe a little bit about who their audience is, anything that'll inform the read. Do they want breaths left in? Do they want breaths moved out, removed? What file format do they want it in? Do they want a WAV file? Do they want an MP3? Is there a particular bit and frequency setting you want it recorded at? You know, those kinds of things. And then I'll take care of it from there and then send them the finished files. If they want them chopped up, like, you know, the e-learning module we've created is 30 slides long. It's 100 slides long. I'll provide you a distinct audio file for each of those slides to make it easier for you to drop into your authoring tool. Some want just, hey, I'll chop it up on my end. Just give it to me. Leave a couple of seconds of space between slides, something like that. It's different client to client, so it's a conversation. But we can meet any of those specs these days from home.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Jane asks an interesting question or mentioned something. She says when she records VO, she tries to remain still so that the mic doesn't pick up the extra noise. That is a valid point. So I'm talking about flailing about trying to embody the physicality of the performance. You also, at the same time, have to keep in mind, where are you on axis, off axis in relation to the microphone? And am I wearing anything jingly, jangly, rattly? If you're wearing a pressed shirt or something, you'll pick up that stiffness and crunchiness, because the better your mic, the more it captures the subtlety and the nuances of your voice, but also it's picking up everything else. And so soft clothing, less things that can kind of rattle about. And yeah, you do have to stay relatively in position. So that's why I'm moving my hands to capture a lot of the physicality, because I don't want to start turning my head too much. I could do that a bit more if I was in a bigger Hollywood recording studio with an even more sensitive mic with, you know, mics have different pickup patterns as well. So the one most of you are recording on probably uses a cardioid pattern. It's kind of a, well, it's like a heart shape, upside down, kind of heart shaped ish, maybe an apple shape because of where the stem comes in. It's got this bit here, lobe. So it's capturing this area around you, right? Because I'm in a smaller booth, even though it's well treated, I'm trying to minimize a lot of outside noise because it is not entirely soundproof. You know, Hollywood studios invest millions in acoustic decoupling and all kinds of soundproofing. I'm in a townhouse with neighbors on either wall. And so I had to do the best I could. So I use my mic in a pattern called hypercardioid, which instead of having this big lobe, it's a smaller lobe with a little bit of a tail behind it, but it allows me to eliminate more of the unwanted noises. But it also means the my ability to move around within that space and have the mic pick up my voice is somewhat limited. So I have to learn to, and I think, you know, we all to some extent have to learn, how do you work that mic? Not too close, but not too far away. The closer I am, the more things sound woofy and boomy. The further away I am, the more I'm picking up ambient noise that I don't want, which is why we generally say, you know, like 6 to 8 inches or some hang loose distance is pretty good distance to work that mic, typically.
Very cool. Jan's got a question in the questions. I record audios for my technical courses that are regularly updated as details change. I may have recorded in October and now I'm editing in April. Any tips for making new audio from the same narrator match existing audio?
Well, a lot of voice actors definitely have to do that. You'll be called back by a client and they'll want it to fit into a series of stuff that you might have done a long time ago. The first thing is know your mic position, right? Oftentimes what you'll see in Hollywood studios, if they don't seat you in a booth, and again, you have an engineer that's setting all that up, making sure everything is precisely right. You might put a tape line on the floor. Like if you're recording while you're standing, you might do a tape line on the floor to, you know, wherever your feet are. So your positioning is basically the same. Don't be moving your mic around if you can. Mine almost never gets moved unless I'm mucking with cables or doing something different. It is always in the exact same spot. And I stand in always the exact same spot on the floor. Another tip would be, if you recall what time of day you did that recording, try to record at that time of day again. Because I don't know if you guys have noticed it, especially for us guys, real early in the morning, our voices have a beautiful resonance, right? They're deep, they're rich, they're gravelly, you know, because we haven't fully warmed up, is why, and that's why you're kind of getting some of that sound.
Yeah.
Your muscles are more relaxed. Maybe you're not as hydrated. Could be a bunch of different factors. By the afternoon, our voices tend to come up in pitch because they've been used all day. Your vocal cords are extremely warmed up. You might have more wear and tear on your vocal cords throughout the day. And so trying to match, it's all about matching, right? Then when you're recording, if you're listening through headphones, pay attention to the VU meter, right? See where your average level is. Look at the waveforms from the prior recording and see when I'm talking to the mic, is that waveform matching more or less the highs and lows, the same amplitude of the prior recording? And if it's not, you know, something in the adjustment might be off. Your distance to the mic might be off. Maybe you adjusted the gain on your preamp a little bit up or down in the intervening months. One thing I like to do to match, like if a client asks me to do a pickup on a project they did a couple months ago, I'll go into the original file. I'll copy, save it as a new file. I'll edit out some of the stuff I don't want, but I want to be able to see that waveform amplitude. And then I'll start recording the new stuff adjacent to that so I can see if they're more or less the same. And then I'll delete this stuff out that I don't want. But it has to be the pre-processed stuff.
Right.
So I know I'm rambling, it may sound like, but a little more insider baseball that should help you. I do not just record and edit one file and then send it to you. I have multiple versions of that file. So what I do is I'll save the first file, just the raw recording, as a master file. And it's raw. It has all the takes I later delete, all the glitches, all my visual indications of when I signal to do a pickup. So I might have mentioned doing this before. That's one thing. If you don't do something called punch and roll recording, you need a visual way to see where your takes are in the waveform. And if you snap close to the microphone, it creates a spike in the waveform, a vertical line that it's kind of like dropping a marker. But I use markers for something else, so I don't do that for pickups. I'll do that for file separation later. But where the heck was I going with that idea?
The multiple files.
It wasn't about multiple files. It was okay. Just really about matching and stuff, right?
Yeah.
You're right, Chris, multiple files. So I'll save one as a master file. Once I edit out the takes I don't want, before I do any processing, it's just editing. I edit out the takes I don't want. I edit out any spaces I don't want. It's just an edited version. I'll save that as an edited version. And then I'll do one more save. I know people who do multiple more versions than this. I do three. I'll do one more save that includes the processing, where the breaths have been reduced, where sibilance, if there's too much of a prominent or something, I'll shorten the wave, I'll lower the waveform. I might cut a little bit of the waveform out so it's not so dragged out. Edit out any mouth clicks, pops, run my general processing over it. And then after that, then I'll cut it up into multiple files if that's what you want. But that allows you to always go back to the raw files or the edited version if you don't want to deal with all the garbage that was in the master, to match a file later. If I'm trying to match the sound, I'll go back and keep a portion, maybe the earlier recording of that very section of the script that maybe they've made some changes to or something, and then save it as a new file and then record the new audio from there. And it's easier to kind of match up the sound. Then you run it back through your processing and it'll be hard to tell the difference.
Yeah, you do this all the time. And so it's probably stuff that you kind of remember as you go through it. For e-learning professionals who aren't doing it so much, it might be a good idea to take notes, right?
I was going to say. Yeah.
Right? Like to remember what kind of effects you use to get a particular
sound. Oh, for sure.
You know?
Well, here's the thing, Brent.
The area where you recorded it?
Look, the more you can match what you did the first time, the better. So any professional voice actor who has their own studio already has a standard set of processing tools that they use. They're always recording in the same space, on the same mic, in the same booth. And if they don't, I sure hope they've saved their old mics, because a lot of us are experimenting. We're like upgrading our microphones and stuff like that. And the new mic might not sound like the old mic in that space. So hopefully you still have the old mic you can hook back up. I stay on one. I use the same processing on every single e-learning project. I'm set up to match. If you're recording in an office environment in a little foam box with a Blue Yeti microphone or something, it might be in a different position in that room, right? Odds are the room was never properly acoustically treated. You're doing the best that you can. To Brent's point, take notes. If you think you're going to be recording again, take notes of exactly what you did.
And the more you do these, the more things you'll think to include in your notes. Because the first time you try to come back and re-record something and you go, I wish I'd remembered to write that down. Use that as the guide to improve your notes as you go along.
Happened to me. Yeah. I mean, it's happened to me, not recently, but previously with clients where I'm like, oh my God, I've changed something and they're asking me to match it. What do I do? You know, you do what you just said. Yeah. Yeah, you do the best you can. Get it as close as you can.
Cool. That's brilliant. I think we're creeping up on the end of our time here. These have been some absolutely very helpful tips. Lots of extra things in the chat that we haven't even gotten to. But I think, you know, Jane really appreciating the idea of going back to a previous clip to match, noting she's just been recording a series of over multiple weeks, and it's a challenge to match, but we'll try that tomorrow. The time of day thing is definitely something that I've noticed. I know if we're coming into Idiotic, even in the mornings, I don't sing in the car on my drive in, because I don't want to get it. You're cruising along to the sounds coming out the radio, and you realize that, oh, you get in and your voice is all kind of worn out just because, you know, you've been singing for an hour in the car.
Maybe so. Quietly hum. That's a good way to hold it.
I do have to. Yeah. I can't stop. But it's you try to be at least conscious of, you know, you're not getting the high notes.
A lot of mornings, the first thing I say, the first words out of my mouth is, good morning, Chris. So I'll have to catch
as he's hacking up a long guy clearing out the
guy. Yeah, right. Well, awesome. This has been a ton of fun.
Yeah. John? Hey, well, thanks for having me, guys. Happy to come back anytime.
Yeah, very awesome. People get a hold of you if they want to hire you.
You can hit me up at johnkissinger.com. I'll put the link in the chat here. Make sure I'm spelling my name right. There it is. Or you can connect with me on Twitter. I sometimes go through dry spells there, but lately I've been active again. So, I'm around.
Awesome. Cool. Tips as always, man.
Thanks. You bet. My pleasure.
Thanks for hanging out. It was a good time.
My pleasure. Thanks for the invite, guys.
Thanks, gang. Thanks for being idiotic with us this week. We'll see you next week.
It comes naturally.
Phil's out of here. Special effects.
Whoa!